right here on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
This is the Progressive Radio Network, information for the independent mind.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios, New York City. If you'd like today's program, want to see it, if you've listened to it, maybe you've listened over a telephone, you can always go to YouTube because now we're posting our video streams later that day or the next day on YouTube. Today, we're going to talk about health and healing. I'm going to talk about chocolate and spearmint, how that can help you, especially your brain. I'm also going to talk about how green tea and the specific chemicals in green tea can actually extend our lifespan. And also, there's exciting new information on vitamin C stopping cancer stem cells from forming. That's a big deal. And a whole lot more on health and healing. Then we're going to look at other issues as well. I'm going to take a few moments to talk about the weather. Why? Because it's my view that we're not paying the attention that we should. New York Magazine just came out with a very powerful piece. More focused and more predictive than what I would expect. And it shows that we are entering a period where they believe over the remainder of this century, next, let's say, 80 years, that life is going to become simply uninhabitable, this planet. I would agree with part of that, but I would also say that that's becoming true right now. And we're having thousands of these remarkable weather events on a weekly basis around the world. And I'm just going to give you some examples. I'm going to show you some still photographs, going to show you some video footage, going to have you hear some things that have been happening just over the last week as an example how bad it is. But here's the key. If it's not bad for you where you live, if you're not in the middle of the biggest sandstorm ever or the hottest day ever in your community, or if you're not having to move out of your home because it's flooded, then it may be a non-story. But it's still happening. And I believe that we should start making preparations for those who live in vulnerable places. Not everyone does. What do you do now? What's your plan B, your plan C? So we're going to start a series of what to do when disaster strikes, providing you with positive, constructive, helpful information so that you're not caught blindsided. I remember when Hurricane Sandy hit. It was only a Category 1. That's just one above a tropical storm. And I told the people in the New York area where I broadcast, I said, you should at the very least prepare yourself. Get at least 3 months' worth of food. You can get canned food, bottled food, water, about 2 gallons a day for consumption and food cooking. And that doesn't even include what you would need if you needed water, for example, for a shower. But drinking water, in some places, if power goes out, you're not going to have any water. For example, there's a water pump, and it's based upon electricity. And if that water pump happens to be in the basement, and if your basement is flooded, even if the rest of your property isn't, all the things that require electricity, your television, your computer, your telephone, all these things are going to be out. And you're not going to have food except what you have that can be stored, like canned beans and things like that. In any case, no one did anything. As a result, all of Lower Manhattan, a hugely concentrated, populated area, was without power. I had planned on this happening, and so in our studios at 84th and Broadway, we brought in futon mattresses, 15 of them. We had extra food. I brought an entire tractor trailer of food thousands and thousands of bottles of water and lots of food. And then I asked for volunteers from my audience, and of all the people who showed up, all these Haitian cab drivers showed up, dozens. So we would fill bags of food and water up, and I said, just take it downtown and take it to people who have no power and have need for this. And I did that for a month. And I was thinking, if that happened again today, would those people have learned any lesson? Probably not. If my neighbors, where my home is an example, because I have backup power systems. I have solar. My whole home's based upon solar, 100%. But then I have three backup redundant systems in case that should fail. And so every time there's a big storm and electric's out for a day or two or three or five or a hurricane, I always share what I have with my neighbors. Not one has ever gone ahead and gotten ahead of this curve. So what does it take for us to learn a lesson? So that's what we're going to do also today. Also today, we're going to take a look at how bad is the news? This is in the second part of our program. How much can we trust and how much can we not? And what are some of the sources that we can trust and why? What are some of the sources we can't? I'm going to have Abby Martin share with you an interview she did with a woman who talks about working at CNN and why she quit CNN because of them faking the news. And she'll be very specific. But also, I'm going to share with you today a particular editorial. And this is from Joe Laurie, Hiding U.S. Lies About Libyan Invasion. And this is from Consortium. Now, Consortium News is one of those places, consortiumnews.com, you can trust them. High-level integrity. They're not political in what they choose to present. Rather, they just present the facts. But this shows you how all the mainstream media scrubbed all of the information off their website that can make them look bad after the fact. For example, did you know that there was a major independent, high-quality, scholarly group that made an on-the-ground assessment in Libya and talked about how it should never have been invaded? There was no justification for it. There was no reason to invade it. But the world never knew that. No newspaper presented that. We will. This will be an exclusive. Everything you were told about Libya by the mainstream media, by the president, Hillary Clinton, was simply not true. Look at the consequences of that. So here's the question. If they're willing to scrub off of their own websites anything that makes them look bad, if they're not willing to present papers that are true, then what else have they lied to you about? And we'll get into that. So we have a lot to share. Let's begin. The latest report from Life Extension has a really good series of footnotes, meaning scientific corroboration showing this is really good, that green tea is not just the healthiest drink you could have, but also actually extends your lifespan. It helps with diabetes. It helps with neurodegenerative diseases. And quote, this is from this article. It says, neurodegenerative diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's contribute to early death, and they represent a sizable slice of the overall mortality rate, meaning a lot of people dying are dying because of dementia and Alzheimer's. Green tea extracts, EGCG, fight the causes and progression of neurodegenerative diseases in multiple ways. And then it goes into how they help get rid of the beta amyloid. That's the plaque that is laid down in the brain. So here's the takeaway message from this really good article. That when you're taking green tea, and I suggest taking somewhere in the neighborhood of 500 to 1,000 milligrams of decaffeinated green tea extract each day and spread it over the day. You should always spread your nutrients over a day. For example, you can take your vitamin C and other nutrients in the morning, before your workout, after your workout, with lunch, with dinner, and before you go to bed. And this way you keep your blood thin and therefore less likely to have a stroke or embolism. You keep your arteries healthier throughout the day, the epithelium, so less likely to have something break off and create a clot that cause a heart attack. But this actually helps then the brain breaking down the amyloid plaque. So for anyone suffering from memory loss, even in your 30s, green tea each day. Now, another new study, something we did not know about, I always like to share something that's brand new, and this is brand new. We know that 64% of all adult Americans drink coffee each day, and they get that pick-me-up. What exactly is happening? Well, it's very simple. There's a particular chemical, and this chemical is noradrenaline, and that is stimulated. So when your noradrenaline level goes up, your sense of mental acuity, your sense of being open-eyed, you kind of waking up, that happens. That seems good. It isn't. It's bad because it's an artificial stimulus. And then it plummets down. And once your blood sugar goes up and this caffeine rush goes up and you're awake, it lasts about 35 minutes and it comes down. And when it goes down, you end up with what is called a caffeine letdown. That, in turn, can cause what we call brain fog. This is particularly troublesome in the afternoon. Anywhere between 2 o'clock and 5 o'clock, you just don't have that sharpness. You're not as focused. And so what do? You go for another cup of coffee, and this starts this whole cycle of overstimulating the natural hormones in our body. So what to do? Here's your solution. There's new research that shows that cacao, natural chocolate, healthy chocolate, and spearmint leaf extract can create that same chemical adjustment naturally with no letdown. You don't have that roller coaster up and down. And it's healthy and it does not adversely affect your adrenal glands. So that's good. So we have an alternative now for mental focus and clarity that stimulates the neurotransmitters like noradrenaline. And they found here that you don't need a lot of the phenolic compounds because chocolate's rich in phenolic compounds. Phenolic, P-H-E-N-O-L-I-C, phenolic. Very important for your brain. And anyone who wants to keep your brain younger, longer, blueberries, pomegranate, green tea, onions, apples. These all are rich in phenolic compounds, but one of the biggest, one of the best, is chocolate. It's actually above everything else, so it'd be really important for you. Now, it says here that by 4 hours after consuming this, 46% improvement was demonstrated in just the task, and 121% improvement in other tasks, meaning you actually have greater mental capacity, greater focus. Now, think of all the students listening right now. And I know we have a lot of students because I see their emails. So if you don't want to take coffee or some form of dexedrine or at night to stay up and study, chocolate with spearmint. And it's only 900 milligrams of spearmint. That's under 1 gram. That's a small amount. So, and it works. Also, I want to share the benefits from the Natural Blaze of something almost nobody uses, caraway oil. Now, we know of caraway seeds, poppy seeds, but most people don't use it anymore, and they should. Let me explain why caraway oil is so important for you, would benefit you. First and foremost, it's one of the most important essential oils. It has very good medicinal value. It's produced from the seeds of the caraway plant, and that has a very pleasant, mild scent to it. And it has a distinct caraway spice taste. It helps with indigestion. We have tens of millions of Americans who have indigestion, so it will help you. And especially if you have upset stomach, GERD, peptic discomfort, bloating, heartburn, any of the problems in the GI tract, including irritable bowel syndrome. Next, it helps with depression. Now, depression, we are guesstimating, and there's no accurate figures, but as close as I can come, 40 million Americans every day are living with some form of depression, maybe more or less. there's no way of actually knowing that because a lot of people just live with it instead of trying to understand what's its source and how can they resolve it. But caraway oil can help with that. And it's been used throughout the world to help with mood swings and get you back to a more pleasant mood and also to help you with fatigue. A lot of people have fatigue and lack of interest in life. This simple oil smelling, it can bring that back. Also for heart health. Nowadays, we know that exercise is important, but this simple oil can also help improve heart rate and reduce the risk of stroke and heart attack. It helps with your kidneys and with your urinary tract. It helps get rid of the diuretic implications, meaning the swelling, water loss, or water maintaining. It helps pass kidney stones. It helps men with erectile dysfunction. I found this interesting, that it's been used, the caraway oil is an excellent natural treatment for this. Why? Simple. It stimulates the blood flow to the genital area. It has anti-inflammatory properties at the same time. And it can activate the glands in the area, ensuring libido restoration. So, instead of one of those very toxic, very expensive, and frequently not very effective erectile dysfunctions medication, this can help the men who have erectile dysfunction, and there's no side effects. It can help with respiratory problems, and it is a good disinfectant. It helps with muscle spasms and cramps. So, our nutrient of the day would be caraway seed oil. And some you could consume, and others you simply use it as an aromatic. You can put it into a dispenser and put it on, let's say if you're working at your desk or in your living room, wherever you're at. And you generally put water into a dispenser. You put your oil in there, and then you turn it on, and it vaporizes. And that wonderful, wonderful vapor comes out. So that works also. And for those of you who have been wondering what's one of the newest, most important things on the horizon for Alzheimer's disease, I'll share it with you now. From the University of Nottingham, this plant, which is traditional to Africa, could improve memory and attention in Alzheimer's patients, and they use the leaves and the stem and the root of what is called cattle stick. Cattle, C-A-T-T-L-E, stick. It's a scrub native to western central tropical Africa. It's been used on a lot of people. In fact, more than 500,000 people, half a million people in Britain, are impacted by the disease, and now they're looking at that. So I always like to get you in the loop, so now you got the loop. And there are two studies highlighting traditional medicine on these ailments. That's the latest on health and healing. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting video streaming from our studios in New York City. And if you ever miss a program and you say, what do I do? Simple. I'm going to give you a phone number to call, and you can download up to 5 programs. And here's the number. This is our archive phone number, 701-719-9976. Again, 701-719-9976. 701-719-9976. We're going to take a brief break and come right back. Please stay with us. Keep on pushing. Keep on pushing. I've got to keep on pushing. I can't stop now. Somehow, 'cause I've got my strength, and it don't make sense not to keep on pushing. Hey, hallelujah. Nice to have you with us, everyone. I have some commentaries to share. A one by Chris Hedges, Eating Our Way to Disease. And I think this is important because for my core audience, the people who have been listening to me for a long time, in fact, yesterday in the park, someone said they've been listening to me for more than 45 years when I was back on WMCA and they're still listening today, and they like the social issues and the hard-hitting issues that I take on, because most people are not going to know about these and certainly not know about them in an objective and honest way. But other people just like to hear the health part. But what if I just shared the health part and didn't share with you the consequences of what it took to get you that health information? I'm going to give you the first, the latest on the weather and the environment, but then I'm going to show you why you should consider this. Just consider it. Look at something in its entirety. Hear it in its entirety. Because just as I'm telling you today that chocolate is so good for your brain, Senator Chuck Schumer, leading Democrat in the Senate, is wanting the FDA to regulate chocolate. Why? I mean, that's just ridiculous. So there's always a pushback from some special interest. And if you go back far enough, you almost always find a moneyed interest, some industry that wants you to buy their product instead of a healthier product. And so you wouldn't know that. You'd just simply say one day, gee whiz, what happened to my vitamin C? I went to the health food store and they said they can't sell anymore. And I went to the drugstore and they said, yeah, we can sell it, but only by prescription. So that means I have to go to a doctor and get a prescription in order to get my vitamin C. I used to get, yeah, that's what can happen. And almost did happen. Had I not taken a tour to 57 cities around the United States and rally people to contact their legislators to protect our freedom of choice to have supplements. And had we not fought, had I not debated the head of the FDA and got Senator Proxmire and Congressman Rogers and others on our side, a freedom of choice issue, no one in America would be able to take a vitamin today. You'd be having to get a prescription for the few that you would be allowed to take. You would not be allowed to take coenzyme Q10. You would not be allowed to take resveratrol. No. And the amount of the regular vitamins you could take would be so infinitesimal, they would have no medicinal or functional value. So it's important to see that it's just not about health. There's a bigger story. Now, this is also a bigger story. While I'm talking, you're going to be seeing some footage of weather events just in the last 3 or 4 days. And we're having some really bad times. And yet we're not doing a thing about it. Nothing. Zero. Zip. And there is a group of people, and they're trying to tell us that the answer is in technology. We've got to put all of our money and resources into green technology, and that's how we'll save ourselves. I certainly believe we should be sponsoring green technology. Absolutely. Wave power, wind with bladeless wind power, so you don't have those giant blades killing birds and causing a lot of noise. Geothermal, from all these hot springs we have all over the United States and around the world. And then solar. Absolutely. But what about the other ways? Just last week in India, millions upon millions of trees were planted in one day by a group of Indians who got together and they planted trees all day. Well, that's tremendous. That's something we're not looking at. Protecting and preserving our existing forest, the rainforest and our hardwood forest, but also planting, I believe, at least 10 billion trees. Could we do that in less than a year? We could do that. And then other things we can do that are practical and useful, like getting off meat and going to a plant-based diet. But if someone's done it, and they have, ask the people who've gone on to a plant-based diet, how do you feel? Ask doctors who've gone on a plant-based diet, what did it do for you? Now, tomorrow, we don't have time today. Tomorrow, I'm going to play you a video showing you doctors and patients who gave up a meat-based diet, never believed it would do anything, but changed the outcome of terrible disease that was not medically successfully treated otherwise, doctors healing themselves. So imagine if the whole country began to go meatless, starting with one day a week and then increasing from there. So planting trees, protecting the existing forest from deforestation, and then changing our diet, that can make a tremendous difference, more than anything else that solar or wind or geothermal could do unto itself. But here's what you're faced with. So listen carefully. This is from Alaska Dispatch News. Quote, speedier ice, sea ice, in warming Arctic could spread pollution further. Quote, in the Arctic, bad news for one country could mean worse news for another. And they're talking about the regions warming faster than the rest of the planet and how the pollution is spreading because of that, like oil spills and other organic contaminants are passing from the Arctic where they've been frozen into areas because the ice is melting. Also, we're releasing viruses and bacteria and parasites that are bad. One example, there was one single caribou that had anthrax. It died a long time ago. It was frozen for centuries in the permafrost. The permafrost in Russia thawed, and the anthrax was released. All the other caribou in that area became infected, killing tens of thousands. People became infected. So we didn't hear about it, but it's in the news for people who are actually looking for this information. So imagine what else lies quiet as a deadly killer in frozen glaciers, under the ocean, in the methane mud that's frozen down there, in the boreal forest in Siberia. Well, we're going to find out, and we are. And that's not good. And we should be doing work on that, researching it now, so at least we know what to expect by taking test samples of soil from underneath the ocean and all around and see what's there, what do we need to know. So that's one story. And then another story talked about how we are now having some of the hottest days on record. Watch some of our clips now.
Shifting winds are fanning the flames of this fast-moving wildfire in Arizona.
I need to ask you guys all to leave.
Mandatory evacuations have been ordered for the nearly 1,500 people living in the town of Mayer, about 75 miles north of Phoenix.
They're my daughters.
Families quickly packing up what they could as the fire jumped Highway 69, forcing a partial closure. Extreme heat, dry conditions, and strong winds all posing a challenge for firefighters battling multiple wildfires in the western U.S. The Bryan Head Fire in Utah has destroyed more than a dozen homes. It's raged largely unchecked for close to 2 weeks. The blaze has scorched nearly 50,000 acres and ranks as the largest of 20 major wildfires burning across six western states.
You have it. You have six wildfires. Excuse me, you have six states that have major wildfires. Arizona's got the worst wildfire in its history. Think of it this way. I remember being in Arizona recently, and you fly into Phoenix, then you drive up north, and as you go up north, you go through Sedona, beautiful community. It's a very small community. You can drive through it about 5 minutes. It only has about 12,000 residents. And then you go further up another hour and 20 minutes, you hit Flagstaff, the highest point in the state. That's where the university is. And a lot of people would go from Phoenix to Flagstaff because it was cooler there in the summer. Property was very expensive because you would have these magnificent views where you could look 20, 30 miles. And it was just spectacular, something that Ansel Adams would have photographed and did back at the beginning of the century, 20th century. And now when I'm up there, and you can go up on my website and under photographs, you'll see I've got a white T-shirt on. And what you didn't see is a person coming by took a picture. And I wanted people to see the smoke because everywhere I was, there were fires. In fact, I was told I shouldn't be up there because it was too dangerous. But I can handle myself. And I knew as long as I stayed in certain areas, I'd be all right. But the whole area was just burned out, homes burned out. So now that's permanent. 12 months a year, there's fires. In California, fires constantly. And so places that people used to covet, that they wanted to live, they can't because of the fires. Then I'm in Colorado, and I go to Colorado regularly, and I've had about 37 different television specials and documentaries that appeared out there. And I want to talk about how Colorado is running out of water, and it's drying out. And so where it was one of the most popular places with Aspen and Telluride and Denver, Colorado City, all these beautiful places, that they better pay attention. And I remember that it's called hold and release. What you're not seeing when you're in one of these fun drives is your host is standing beside you, and they'll kind of hold your elbow or your arm and then release it. And when they release it, you're supposed to shut up because they're going to talk, all right? And so when I started to talk about weather and global warming and what it could do and what you should prepare for, they told me to stop. So I didn't say anything more, respectful of it's their station, their program. 2 months later, the worst mudslide in Colorado history, if not that entire part of America, happened. 2,200 homes were damaged or destroyed. The largest wall of mud and water came down all these mountain areas that people had million-dollar homes on, just washed them all away. And now there's severe drought in Colorado, as there is in Kansas and 20 other states. So why aren't we telling people where you shouldn't be moving? You shouldn't be moving on the ocean because it's unsustainable. And it is going to be a problem. So we have all this happening right now. And I believe that if you knew how bad it is, example, 22 million people in China were adversely affected last week by flooding. The very next day, Saturday, 500,000 people in Japan had to move out of an area, flooding, destroying homes. Then you also had some of the worst flooding in the United States, in Michigan. In fact, it was the worst in Michigan history. So all across the country, you have flooding and fires, and the big events aren't even happening yet, the hurricanes. We already have reached, at this point, this time, the most severe weather events in American history. We're already at 12, the 13 right now, at $1 billion minimum per, and that's the normal year, it's 5. So we're halfway through the year, and we're already double any other year in American history. Now imagine that. So wouldn't you think that would be newsworthy? You've had 12 of the worst weather events in American history? This cost us at least $12 billion? Not a word. You wouldn't know it. So we're entering some very serious tipping points. We are tipping. And to the author of the New York Magazine article, very good article, I recommend people read it, comes up with severe predictions. It's just he believes the severe predictions are further down the road. But I've interviewed 15 climatologists who say, now for the next 12 years, and the most optimistic is 12 years, and many think it'll happen within 5 years, we're going to see parts of America simply, you can't grow anything and too hot to live. How many days do you think you could live in an environment where the average temperature is 122 degrees? That means you couldn't be outside for more than 15 minutes without suffering a heat stroke. That's already happened this 2 weeks ago in Arizona, in Phoenix. And that's just the beginning. That'll become a new norm until people just realize this is the new norm. And think of the pollution that's caused by air conditioners because you've got to keep your house cooled 24/7. And what's going to happen when we run out of water? And we are running out of water. So I'm just giving you a heads up. As bad as you think it is, this is nothing compared to what's going to happen in the next 24 months. Just a heads up. Now, I want to read something. I'm going to read, not all of it, but I'm going to read some of it, from one of America's most honest, dependable, articulate, and intelligent authors, journalist, Chris Hedges. This is in Truthdig. It's entitled Eating Our Way to Disease, and I'll tell you why this is so important, because I was a part of this. I'm going to show you how I was a part of it. Chris didn't know this, so he might have reported on it or not, but I was a very important part of trying to get Senator McGovern's office, because I was working with the chief of his staff on this, of getting a new food pyramid made. I made a new food pyramid, and I put what should be consumed each day at the bottom of the pyramid, which is where most foods, instead of dairy and meat and wheat, I had fruits and vegetables, grains, nuts, and seeds. And then the next step, up and up until you had all of it health building. And then I was told after the committee had released its report, after all the science was done, after I'd submitted multiple reports, I submitted over 1,000 reports, 1,000 studies to them, and I volunteered to testify. And when they said it wouldn't be necessary for me to personally come down and testify, I went ahead and did a series of demonstrations down there after the report came out. You can see the photographs of me with thousands of my listeners from PFW and BAI demonstrating in front of the Capitol because the fix was in. They weren't going to make any suggestions that would actually help Americans. So what you're eating today, and you think it's good or healthy, and therefore you don't question it, your doctor doesn't question it, the nurse, the pharmacist, the news media, don't question what you're eating or drinking today. You'll see a big yawn and rolling of the eyes if you suggest that what you've been eating and they've been telling you to eat and what they've been advertising on their radio stations, their newspapers, their magazines are actually causing the obesity and diabetes and overweight and heart disease and stroke and Alzheimer's epidemics. They'll just think that's nonsense. But in fact, all the American media that has been promoting the standard American diet is complicit. So that's why if you just want to know about health and nutrition, you better also want to know the truth about how we at least know what's wrong with the diet, because quite frankly, that hubris or indifference to knowing the truth about nutrition could cause you to die or age or be diseased. Here it is from Chris Hedges. In July 1976, the Senate Committee on Nutrition and Human Needs, chaired by Senator George McGovern, held hearings entitled Diet Related to Killer Diseases. The committee heard from physicians, scientists, nutritionists on the relationship between Americans' diet and diseases like diabetes, heart disease, and cancer. 6 months later, the committee released the Dietary Goals for the United States, which quickly came to be known as the McGovern Report. Quote, decrease consumption of meat. The report urged Americans decrease consumption of butterfat, dairy, eggs, and other high cholesterol sources. Quote, the simple fact is that our diets have changed radically within the last 50 years, McGovern said, and these dietary changes represent a great threat to public health, as much so as smoking. Too much fat, too much sugar or salt can be and are linked directly to heart disease, cancer, obesity, stroke, among other killer diseases. In all, 6 of the 10 leading causes of death in the United States have been linked to our diet. Those of us within our government have an obligation to acknowledge this, end quote. Okay, good. Good. He told the truth. All the studies we had sent, I sent also the bios of at least 20 different nutritional scientists and medical doctors who had a background in the association between diet and disease. We flooded them with information for a long time. Something good happened. No. Nothing good happened. None of that, not a single syllable of that, became public knowledge. Why? Quote, the response to the report was swift and brutal. The meat, egg, and dairy industries lobbied successfully to have the document withdrawn. They orchestrated new hearings, supplying a list of their experts, approved by the National Livestock and Meat Board, so that in the words of Ray Finney, then the president of the American National Cattlemen's Association, the public would, quote, get a balanced, correct view of this whole matter, end quote. A new report was released in December 1977. The second edition insisted that, quote, meat, poultry, and fish are an excellent sources of amino acids, vitamins, and minerals, end quote. The Select Committee on Nutrition and Human Needs was abolished. Its functions were taken over by the Agriculture Committee. The Agriculture Committee looks after the producers of food and the consumers, and not the consumers, and particularly not the most needy. So that's how it went. So meat, dairy, eggs, sugar, they won. And if you haven't seen the film Cowspiracy, I recommend it. It's a very well-done film on the environmental impact of animal agriculture and industry. And, quote, this is what Chris Hedges said. That film led me to become a vegan. Recently released a new film, What the Health, which looks at how highly processed animal products are largely responsible for the explosion of chronic and lethal diseases like diabetes, heart disease, and cancer that beset the United States and much of the rest of the industrialized world. Both films are available on Netflix. And then it goes into depth about how the pharmaceutical industry is also behind this. The animal agricultural industry, like the fossil fuel industry or any other branch of the corporate state, profits at the expense of our health and even our lives. And then he talks in here about the industries, how much they're spending on getting their message out. And they're spending $5 billion. Billion with a B. And just on one area. And every place they want to make money, they have to spend money. So where they spend it? They spend it on our legislators. They spend it on members of the House, the Senate, state legislators through ALEC, the American Legislative Exchange Council. 25,000 bills have been passed into law based upon ALEC writing them, and ALEC is about 300 major corporations that in secret lobby your state legislators to get their laws that benefit them, not us, on the books, and their name, their fingerprint never touches anything. So when they wanted to ban vitamins, these are the clowns who were behind it. When they wanted to make sure that you were afraid of taking coconut oil, these are the people behind it, the lobbyists, the special interest group. After all, if you want to take a healthy oil like olive oil or coconut oil, then you wouldn't be using their unhealthy products like their trans fat margarines. So in any case, why am I particularly interested in this topic? It's simple. In the first study of its kind ever done, I was able to isolate at the Institute of Applied Biology, where I was a senior research fellow in nutritional sciences and anti-aging medicine, two different areas. I was able to find that a single bean, a black bean, had all eight essential amino acids. That went against every textbook I'd ever studied, becoming a dietitian and a nutritionist and everyone else. We were told that only animal proteins, meaning your meat, fish, chicken, eggs, dairy, only those contain all eight essential amino acids. If you're just eating vegetables and grains and nuts and seeds, those are incomplete. And the whole myth that we want to build strong muscles, we want to have good, strong bodies. You needed meat to do it. Hence, the idea that meat had to be there three times a day. And that was the myth, the lie, that caused the epidemic of heart disease, diabetes, cancers, aging of the brain, and Alzheimer's. So on the one hand, science had been corrupted. And everything that fell into line after that was simply unintentionally passing on misinformation. So here I had information. It took me over a year and a half to perfect all of it. I had to do tests on every single food. I found all foods contain all eight amino acids. And then when you combine them in normal edible portions, they actually have more net protein utilization than 5,000 combinations of those 5,000 combinations, more than all the other animal proteins. So it set a whole new standard. I sent this information to everyone, the USDA, the FDA, MIT, Harvard, the American Diabetic Association, the American Heart Association. I sent out over 7,000 copies of my report. Here's what should have happened. The UN should have used it, and therefore, instead of sending non-fat dry milk to poor people in Africa, which can cause diarrhea from food allergies and then cause malnutrition in the mother, as well as deficiency in breast milk, causing the death of the infant. And also they were giving the infant this milk formula with polluted water. They could have been making grains and beans that they could have grown. I even was showing them how to do it with less water in drought areas that would have given them more amino acids, the building blocks of protein, than had they had meat or dairy. I was told by a high-ranking official who met with me at the UN that it was great science, that they had gone through, they had passed it, it was revolutionary, but they couldn't use it at all because they were up against moneyed and political interest that were supporting the dairy industry and getting them their non-fat dry milk. No, not a single solitary soul that I sent it out to ever responded to it. They simply denied that it existed. So instead of being able to get off meat products, which pollute the environment, contaminate our air with methane gases, I was told that, gee whiz, this is going nowhere. It took me 12 years before it was finally published in a peer-reviewed journal. I would, in the interim, do a book called The Egg Project that I think it went into 22 editions. It was a huge bestseller and showed about how to plan your diet based upon combinations of different foods and the science behind this. So think of it this way. Think that you have possibly the most one of the most important discoveries in the history of nutrition that could have helped prevent, if people used it, could have prevented a lot of diseases due to our diet, and it's intentionally suppressed. Media won't touch it. No one will interview you on it. It's like it didn't happen. So that is the issue. So Chris wasn't aware of that. But all the while this was going on, I was trying to get this information out to everyone, but nobody wanted to hear it. It was a truth that everyone had to deny. Why? Because it's a $300 billion a year industry, growing and raising and selling us the food that we think we have to have in order to be strong. Well, I want to tell you, some of the greatest athletes in the history of the world have been vegans. Carl Lewis is just one example. And other athletes, football players, boxers. It's just we don't want to focus on it. Because how can you share two messages that are so contradictory? One has science on its side, veganism. The other has death on its side, animal-based diet. But preventing you from having that information is all economics and politics. And now let's hear from Abby Martin talking about censorship in the media. I mean censoring good reporters who've done honest work, want to tell us something that we did not know, and yet they're told no. This is a CNN reporter who was constantly censored. Let's hear in her own words about this, because this was nowhere else in the media.
So we're here to go over a topic of censorship and truth in media. I'm joined now by investigative journalist and former CNN reporter Amber Lyon. Amazing to have you on, Amber.
Thank you, Abby, so much for having me. It's an honor.
So, Amber, you famously left CNN after working there for years, citing reasons of censorship. Can you talk about what happened with your documentary that you filmed in Bahrain for the network?
Yeah, we produced this documentary exposing that this Bahrain regime, the regime the United States had been supporting financially and with weapons, that this same regime was actually even using some of those weapons to torture and murder its people. And after we produced this documentary, we were told by CNN International that the documentary wasn't going to air. And we were given almost no explanation, Abby, as to why they chose not to air this documentary. And after further investigation, we found out that Bahrain was a paying customer at the network at CNN, that Bahrain and several other pro-United States regimes worldwide are actually paying CNN to produce positive content and fake documentaries about them, which I consider to be infomercials for dictators. And I think that CNN sprinkles this into their programming with little or no disclosure to viewers and their own journalists. And it's really defrauding viewers and really misleading people, Abby.
That is fascinating, Amber. What I find most interesting is that every time I talk about self-censorship to people like Piers Morgan or Bob Garfield on NPR, they are all shocked. They're like, what are you talking about? We never self-censor. I mean, do you think that this is a big issue in the press today?
It's a tremendously big issue, Abby. A lot of the muckraking journalists have actually had to leave the mainstream, including myself, because we just can't do our jobs on these networks because there is so much censorship. In 10 years of working in the mainstream, I was censored on stories at every single one of my jobs, whether that be to please corporate interests or the story was censored to please the United States government. So this is a chronic problem that's really destroying journalism in the United States, and people really need to understand when you're watching the mainstream mainstream media, you're not getting the accurate picture. A lot of the journalists have been turned into lapdogs versus watchdogs because that's what management wants.
Right. I mean, I was just mentioning two reporters that have basically said that they resigned because they were sick of reprinting government press releases. I mean, this is the way it works on the Hill here, Amber. I mean, as someone who's worked in the establishment media for so long, how would you say the editorial process works when people pitch stories they want to cover? I mean, do most journalists have that editorial freedom?
No, they don't. And I didn't have that when I was at CNN. And you're talking about that close, cozy relationship between Washington reporters and the U.S. government. While I was at CNN, I'd actually have other journalists at CNN write me and call me and ask me to amend my stories in favor of the U.S. government or government entities. They would call me on behalf of the U.S. government to change my stories, which I often refuse to do. But I mean, that's just the nature of what's going on there. A lot of these journalists have cozy relationships with authorities that are very questionable. They're doing more propaganda than they are actually investigative journalism. And two, there's a message sent from the top down to journalists in these newsrooms as to what's appropriate to cover and what's not. Case in point, the Occupy movement. Almost instantly when the Occupy movement started, management made it seem like it was an annoying movement, like viewers didn't want to see what was happening on the streets, like they were just some, you know, hippies with no important message. And one executive at CNN, I was sitting down at dinner with him, actually told me that Occupy didn't deserve to be covered. And so when this is sent from the top down, this kind of message as to what you should be reporting on, it really influences what you end up seeing on the TV at the end of the day, Abby.
Amber, you bring up a really good point. And you know, it's really, really interesting that you were talking about Bahrain actually funding these networks, because I think when people think of corporate media, the last thing they're thinking of is actually tyrannical establishments or regimes from around the world actually also funding. How much do you think that an unchallenged establishment by mainstream journalists is due to a loss of access to sources?
I think that is one of the main causes. You know, I think that right now we're just not seeing investigative journalism, and so the corrupt are getting away with whatever they choose because there's not a lot of investigation, Abby.
Right. And you know, you mentioned before the Occupy Wall Street thing, and I wish that I would have told Piers Morgan, you know, censorship isn't really just the black hand of the advertiser or the state blacking out a story. It's framing and it's bias as well. There's so many different elements of censorship in the way that you can portray a story or marginalize and minimize a story. Amber, RT is funded in the same way Al Jazeera and BBC are. Why do you think the establishment press looks at RT so differently than those networks?
Well, it's almost like they're trying to revive the Cold War mentality at a disturbing and dangerous level, Abby. And oftentimes, you mention, you point out the atrocities of the United States government constantly, but they just didn't pick up on that. Instead, they took your statements against Putin's actions as a chance to kind of revive this anti-Russia mentality, this dangerous mentality that they're spreading. And I find it very suspicious, Abby, that when you do speak out against the West and against corrupt corporations, there's just silence. There's no international headlines from that, but they definitely took your message and misconstrued it and then covered it worldwide.
And then, of course, you know, tried to marginalize me when they realized that I wasn't that kind of anti-Russian pawn that they were looking for to promote their Cold War narrative, Amber. It's really scary to kind of see myself, you know, criticizing the corporate media every day and to see myself as kind of the pawn being used in this machine, chewed up, spit out. I mean, as an objective viewer watching all of that unfold, what do you think about the way the media has been covering the crisis in Ukraine? Do you think they've been covering it responsibly?
I want to thank all of you who came to Saturday's webinar on overweight. I answered over 37 questions. We'll be posting that later in the week. And I'm only doing one more webinar because my schedule's changing right now. I have to be filming and out of the United States the next two weekends. So this coming weekend, Saturday, I'm doing my last one for the summer. It's on menopause, perimenopause, menopause, postmenopause, how to prevent it, the symptoms, how to reverse it, how to regain your vitality and youth. And you can go to GaryNoll.com to see about that one and signing up. Have a nice day, everyone. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Whoa, 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 whoa.
Oh, oh, oh.